Hi, everyone. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. It is March 4th, no jokes, everybody, 2024, the 24th of Adar 1, 5784. Taping this a day early because I'm getting on a plane tonight to Miami to do some speaking and just do a bunch of things, talk in schools, talk in synagogues, have some meetings with people. If you're in the area, be in touch with me. Some people have already. I would love to see you. So I didn't want to disappoint all of you, and I wanted to make sure the podcast went out this week, even though I'll be on a plane. And so I asked T.R.L. Cohen to join me today. I spoke last week about the unbelievable women's mission that I had in Yehuda v'Shomron, and she was one of the standouts, and everybody was incredible. I've known T.R.L. since she was 21, and she's only 31 now. The things that she is accomplishing are just absolutely mind-boggling, even for an Israeli, and even for an Israeli woman. So T.R.L., thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you, Eve. It's my pleasure.
So I had not, until we met last week, caught up with you on really what had happened to your amazing programs, Kedma, your villages, on October 7th, but maybe give us like the lead up to what you've been doing basically for the past decade.
Yeah, thank you. If we start by the 7th of October, we will just exactly. Stay stuck there, of course. You said it's the 4th of March, and it just feels like we're in an endless October. Time just doesn't go by, and on the other end, it flies. So yeah, in general, I established Kedma in 2014. Can't believe it's been a decade. As a young adult, I was 21 years old, started learning in Tel Aviv University. And our goal was to strengthen the community resilience in border communities. Along Israel's borders, there's around 300 communities, small communities. We're talking that the smallest one would be 30 families. The largest one would be 400 families. Very small communities that are struggling with security issues and demographic issues. And of course, answers for all regular needs of communities as education and welfare. And those communities are very strategic to the state of Israel because, of course, they're on the border and they're important if we look at it in a security way. And also, if I can allow myself with you, Eve, and your amazing audience to be a little spiritual and to say that that is the way we mark the land of Israel. So these border communities have such an important goal. And at the end of the day, we, as Kedma, decided we're a group of 13 young women that established Kedma. And our goal is to strengthen the everyday life, the community resilience, as we call it. And we bring together young adults from ages 18 to 35 to live and volunteer in those communities. We work today in 96 border communities. With the goal of strengthening them from the inside. In my other hat, I'm also a PhD researcher. I study community resilience in Ben-Gurion University, and we can show statistically that the communities will thrive or not, depending on those soft skills of how the community is connected between itself.
So when I met you, really at the beginning of this whole process, I think you were establishing a student village in Maale Ephraim, if I'm not mistaken, which is like technically in the Jordan Valley, but it's a little bit up the hill. And you also, when you defined border communities, it wasn't necessarily on the periphery of Israel, meaning with Gaza, which we can talk about later because we've seen what's happened there, with Egypt and in Lebanon and on the Jordan Valley. But you also have some communities within Judea and Samaria, because you speak about the spiritual component and about defining where Jews can settle in the land of Israel. And even though we are not technically, I'm putting myself in there in Efrat, even though we are not technically on a border with another country, all the mess here is all ceasefire lines and everything, but you felt that it fell into your definition of what a border community was to also establish certain of these communities within Yehuda and Shomron.
The Israeli government is the one that decided to define it that way, meaning there's a list of those 300 communities. They're called national priority communities. It means that these communities are in a very high importance to the state of Israel. And those communities are in the Arava, on the Egypt, on the Jordan border, in the Negev, on the Egyptian border, in the Gaza envelope, in the Lebanon border, in the Syrian border. Yes, and also in Judea and Samaria. That's how the Israeli government defines its border. Of course, it's a philosophical term. What right. is a border exactly, right? But what we can say is that the enemy is very close. The terror is constantly there. And it's very hard to live, even in Efrat, one of the largest communities in Judea and Samaria. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to live with a constant terror threat and to have such a challenging neighbors. Let's put it that way.
Right. And you live not far from me. Also, Gush Etzion, your neighbors are possibly even worse than mine. But absolutely.
Well, yes.
So now, how did you decide on the 18 to 35?
What I see, these ages of young adults, 18 to 35, is the ages in which young adults in Israel, but in the whole world, on one hand, they have so much potential and they decide all their big life decisions, what they will learn, what they will work in,
Well, in Israel, they go into the army, many of them first as well.
Right, of course. So our program starts a gap year before IDF, before military service. And we also have a program called Nahal with the army. A part of the army service is in the communities, in Kedma communities. And then we have a program for discharged soldiers, a working program. We give jobs to soldiers that are after the army. And we also give the communities the opportunity to have working hands that are a lot of time in shortage. We have the student villages, which is our largest program. It's academic students in Israel. It's usually the girls are from 22, the boys are from 25, and it could get up to their 30s. And we also have young families, communities that we help with demographics, the communities that are stuck and want to bring more families. We help them to bring together groups of young families. So we do all that from 18 to 35, because on one hand, it's such an age with such a potential and a way to give to those communities. And on the other hand, it's a very confusing age, especially, I think, young adults in the whole world, the millennials for sure, Y or Z generation, however you want to call it. It's just a very confusing phase in life. And people, Israeli young adults, are looking for meaning, are looking for belonging, especially with social media. That's an international crisis. There's a feeling that loneliness is tougher than ever in these ages. So coming to live in border communities gives a sense of belonging because they live together as a group of people like them. And in all our models, it's a win-win situation. And the student villages, they get scholarships. In all the programs, they get affordable housing, which is less than market value in 30%. And also they get a community and they get a bet midrash and after evening get together, learning Judaism, and trying to find their own identity inside the very challenging reality, especially in these days. So the young adults get something valuable for their life, and on the other hand, the communities that are in a lack of those ages get significant volunteers and members of the community.
And they
so
stay
it's a win-win.
Can they, like the young couple community, can they stay if they like the community?
Of course, it's a whole process of getting inside of the community and building a home. It's right. not automatic, but it happens right. a lot. And of course, we push for it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So let me add, I just want to segue for a second into your academic degree, the resilience in border communities. How are you seeing that? What came first, your interest in resilience in border communities and realizing that bringing in these populations to border communities would strengthen the community, or the other way around, that, you know, that first you look, you know, first you, whatever, the opposite.
Right. So as you said, you know it's like very, it's a synergy, actually. I see myself as also a grassroots person that I go from community to community and understand the specific needs that each community has. And try to change reality, you know, grassroots, like just to do mm-hmm. the work. On the other hand, I feel that if you don't study and understand the deep theoretical ties And the underground of all this, your work is less meaningful. So I measure the work through my academic studies, and I teach and learn theory. And on the other hand, I do the work, and it all comes together, and it's a lot of a connection there. And so I've been doing the study and the activity all together, all my degrees. I did it all at the same time.
That's quite a field, field research for you. That was quite the dissertation. How many communities do you have now?
So we work regularly in 96 communities. Wow. With around 2,000 young adults, and 100 and more than 25,000 communities, residents in the border communities that we serve.
Is this supported by the government?
Yes, of course. The Israeli government is not an easy partner, but is there. It changes. They can be part of the budget in 40% or 60%. They tell us every year at the last day of the year how much. So it's pretty tough to manage, but they're there for sure.
Let's jump to October 7th.
Let's do that. So, okay. So unfortunately, October 7th, they caught me breastfeeding my child. At around 6:30, I heard the bombs from Gush Etzion. You could hear them very clearly as we are on the hills looking down to Gaza. And then around 6:45, I got the first phone call from our students in Kibbutz Nir Oz in the Gaza envelope, saying there are terrorists inside of the kibbutz. What should we do? I was on phone with them till 5:30 in the afternoon. Unfortunately, the IDF got to our village only at that moment. They only got to the kibbutz at 3 p.m. The statistic is so horrific. There are 400 residents in Kibbutz Nir Oz. 25% of them were or kidnapped or killed. Unfortunately, Hamas just did whatever they wanted. Our village was their headquarters for that day. They were coming in and out. They burned half of it. And they burned most of the kibbutz's home. And Tamar Kedem Simantov, she was our first employee in the Gaza envelope, Kedma employee. And she and her three kids and her husband and her mother-in-law were all killed that day. Unfortunately, many people that we know, many kids were kidnapped by the Hamas. Some of them have returned. Some of them were killed there. Many people we know are still there. Many people we know are killed. It's a horrific situation. We had student guests, not ours, that were killed, two of them in the village, and others that survived, but they lived through a massacre. I just had the unfortunate situation of just hearing it on phone the whole day, and I just can't take those moments out of my head. It was so hard to hear and so hard to be part of it, and so hard to be so scared for our students. One of them, Ron, was hiding the whole time between the bed and the wall, and terrorists were on the bed for the whole day, and somehow they missed him. Just miraculous, but so horrific that I can't even call it a miracle. I don't know what it was. But unfortunately, of course, it was nothing in compared to the life that were taken that day. But the village itself was also burned down. And the inspiring decision of our students was to continue with the community wherever it will go. So really? They continued to Eilat. The community of Nir Oz was evacuated to there. And now, a month or two ago, they moved to Kermei Gat in Kiryat Gat, and that's in another area in South Israel, a little more in western. It's not as they lived on the border. Mm-hmm. And now they live there as temporary residents, and our students continued to serve the community also there.
I have to say, Terrell, it's an amazing testament to the commitment that the people that you have brought there have to stay with the community, because they didn't grow up there, right? They come from other places in Israel. This is a program that they went to, and to be able to stay with the people who basically adopted them, or they came together through, I can't imagine a worse scenario than what we, you know, what they've gone through, and to move with them, I think is really a testament both to the kind of people that you send there and to the connections that they have made with the original, the indigenous, if you will, villagers. It's really mind-boggling.
Yes, I can say yes, it is. And we also have other communities in the Gaza envelope, and also in the northern border. We have Sufa, which is also very close to the border, also of Egypt, but also of the Gaza envelope. And also they are evacuated. And the group over there, it's young adults, young IDF soldiers that were discharged. They also now are going with Sufa to wherever they go. They were in Eilat. Now they split to Nir Oz, to Ramat Gan and Ofakim. And we have also a community in Shuva that did the same. Now they're back home in Shuva, thank God. And in the northern border that we have to mention in this conversation, yes, the northern border communities are being through also a very, very tragic days, because of course they didn't go to, they didn't go through the 7th of October as did in the Gaza envelope, which of course you can, I don't have enough words to say, yeah, to compare it, of course, but they still don't have any deadline for when they will come back home. And we know that in Gaza, the IDF did so much work with the terrorists there. We know that on the Lebanon border, the situation is so uncertain, and the communities are still in hotels since the 8th of October, and they don't know where they will come, when they will come back home and how. And it's a very hard situation for a community to survive. So tough day. The northern border communities, they were evacuated for so long. And our communities also there, in communities Misgavam, Metula, Kfar Yuval, Shtula, they all evacuated with the communities to wherever they are, and they're still serving them as we speak. Mm-hmm. And we all pray for better days. What can we do?
I mean, one of the things that came clear, let's say, with the expulsion from Gaza in 2005, is that the people who stayed together and their communities were strong, did better, they had better resilience in the end than those who kind of, some went to this apartment in one city and some went somewhere else, and they didn't have those ties, because inevitably we will all have good days and bad days, and people are, the people having the good days will be able to pick up those who are having the bad day and kind of support each other, and they're all in it together. And to some degree, I think that what you're doing here is somewhat of a microcosm of Israel. I mean, what we've seen here in the last few months is tremendous unity, not on the part of everyone, but on the part of most people. We've seen heroism that is maybe unparalleled ever in the people that went down on October 7th, including, if I'm not mistaken, your husband at some point also went down to Gaza. Yes?
My husband was in the northern border community.
In the northern border. So he was also fighting, as were my sons. And these are people who are protecting not their own families, but the greater family of Israel. And that, we're going to get through this. And that is, I think, the key point that is going to make that difference, that we have so many people in this country who don't think about themselves or even their own personal families. They go because someone else needs them, and it's their time, and they put it out of their minds. And there's a bigger picture here. It's very hard to explain. It's very hard to understand, even though we're living in the middle of it, because it goes against like a lot of human instincts. You want to protect yourself. You want to protect the people around you first, and then you think about the others. And that's not what's happening. Your husband left you in a community in Yehuda in order to protect people in the north. And many men in this country did that. And it's just, it says something about who we are. And the fact that you honed in on this already a while ago and have done so much for so many people, never expecting in your wildest nightmares on October 7th. But there has to be, and if there isn't, I'm going to give it to you, a sense of satisfaction in your heart and for all of you who started Kedma, that when the worst came to, you know, the worst scenario possible happened, your people were there. And it wasn't just like a couple years break for them, but they have actually, you know, been through hell and back with the people in the communities. And if that doesn't say something about the success of your program, I don't know what would. Do you feel that? Can you take a moment and sit with that, even with all the past?
Oh, thank you, Eve, for saying. I'm taking it very close to heart. We're so inside of the doing, especially in these hard days, that we don't have the moments to understand what we're going through. Mm-hmm. And as you say, it's so amazing to see. It's the national spirit. Kedma is just the tool to bring the Israeli amazing spirit to what it is. Only the recruited soldiers, we're talking about 300,000 people that left their homes and their families in such a terrifying situation and went to fight for the country. And I'm happy that Kedma was there and is there to continue and help those important communities. We will. And thank you so much for your kind words. It gives me strength.
Well, I just want my listeners to understand who I surround myself with here in this country and how blessed it is to, and you're such a young woman and you're really amazing. You're inspiration for a lot of other people. You really are. And I know you'll have to work on your paper, and you have a lot more to talk about for your paper. You probably could write two PhDs at this point in resilience in the border communities. But as you said, this is a story that's still ongoing. It's not like it happens and you're doing the research.
Right. And there's also post PhD. So don't worry, we'll have enough papers for all what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that that the international community is also going to be looking to Israel and to some of the work that you're doing and others are doing as well during this insane time. And so hopefully some of the understandings that we have here, unfortunately, will be able to help others. They should never have to go through this, but in order, you know, to be strong in the face of whatever evil it is that they're going to have to be dealing with. Tirael, I know you have to pick your kids up from school. I thank you so much for giving
me
these few minutes.
Thank you for this inspiring talk.
Yeah, no, and I will keep coming to visit you and bring people to you and hopefully, you know, also get you some help to keep going with your programs, because I know the government has other priorities this year, and it would be a shame if you weren't able to do everything you needed to do, which is rebuild, not just build, but now rebuild.
Even re-flourish, let's say that. Beautiful. Out loud.
Re-flourish, I love that.
Okay. Thank you, Eve. All the best.
Thank you so much. Okay, be well.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you to Ben and to Tabitha, as usual, for putting out this show. And to all of you, wherever you are, I hope that you are well. And I hope that you are understanding as the world seems to spin even more out of control and more people seem to have less understanding about what just seems so obvious. I hope you are keeping yourself educated and informed from the right sources about the battle that Israel is fighting, that is your battle as well. Eve Harrow, Rejuvenation on the Land of Israel Network. Take care, everyone, and goodbye for now.